Hello, you're a child.
Yes, I am.
Is this podcast suitable for other children?
No.
Why?
Because it contains bad language.
I added one more podcast to the giant podcast bin. Now you have plucked that podcast out and started listening.
I took my microphone and found some human folk. Then I recorded all the noises while we spoke.
My name is Adam Buxton, I'm a
man. I want you to enjoy this, that's the plan.
Hey, how you doing, podcats? Adam Buxton here, as you well know. Thank you so much for joining me for podcast number 32. I'll tell you about my guest for this week's podcast in just a moment. But for the time being, allow me to paint an amazing word picture for you. We're on the outskirts of Norwich here in the countryside in East Anglia, UK. I'm walking my dog, and it's the evening of the day. The sun is going down over there on the western horizon and lighting up what looks to me like someone's unrolled a load of, you know, you can get cotton wool in sheets. So they've unrolled some of the cotton wool and then tugged at the edges of it so that it's gone into little clumps. It's another classic from my nature description box. You're more than welcome. But look, my guest this week is Tash Dimitriou. She is a comedian, and I met her when I was doing a show at the Invisible Dot in King's Cross, a comedy venue. There was always a lot of good folks hanging around there, including a group of comedians who made a pilot for BBC Three in 2015 called People Time. And that featured Tash and her sometime comedy partner Ellie White, and Tash's brother, Jamie Dimitriou, and Darren Johnson, Alistair Roberts, and Liam Williams of the comedy team Sheeps, and Claudia O'Doherty. So, I mean, they're all brilliant, those people, in People Time. And that show turned into a monthly web series called 2016 Friends. And I'll put an episode of that on my blog. I've actually written the blog post, so it'll be ready for you as you download this podcast, which is pretty together, unusually for me. Back to Tash, though. Over the summer this year, 2016, if you're listening in the future, Tash could be seen in ITV2's current affairs-focused show, 11-ish. I didn't see 11-ish, but I did hear it was good. And on the weekend, just last weekend, I was watching Harry Hill's new TV show, Tea Time, which was making me laugh, and Tash popped up there as a kind of weird Greek archbishop with a big beard. Tash and I recorded our conversation in late June of this year. In fact, I think I'm right in saying it was the same day that I recorded a podcast with the writer, Sally Wainwright. And that was a fairly sober, relatively serious conversation that I had with Sally. And this one I had with Tash couldn't really have been more different and was quite a welcome antidote to the post-Brexit gloom that I was certainly feeling. We started off by talking about online shopping, and then things just degenerated from there. Bums, toilets, midnight wee-wee lakes, smells of all kinds, picking up dog turds. And there was also some slightly more grown-up chat about the fraught business of appearing on TV panel shows, comedy shows, before we returned towards the end of the conversation to smells, albeit nice smells, perfume, etc., which Tash turns out to be sort of obsessed by. Anyway, I hope you feel you've been given a sufficient heads up about the puerility levels in this podcast. If that's a deal breaker, then cheerio, see you another time. But if not, here we go.
today?
I've had a very smug day.
A smug day?
Incredibly smug. Woke up, did some very important online shopping admin.
Yeah. What kind of thing?
Well, I bought a dress 4 years ago that I still haven't worn, so I sent it back the other day, and surprisingly, I've not received a refund. So I called them up to chase that up, and absolutely, absolutely fantastic customer service. And they're looking into it for me, and I can look forward to getting that £55 back.
The world of online refunding is more efficient than one might imagine. Mm. I don't know if we're part of a privileged elite for whom refunds arrive more easily than they would.
No, it's a loophole.
Yeah.
It's a toilet pole. It is genuinely, I've sent stuff back. You know, that's like, I've worn it for sure, and I've got the money back.
Sweat
3 years later, I've got the money back.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we should be talking about it, because I feel like I have this, like, circle. It's like the circle of clothes and money that I have, like, a pocket of about £150 that's constantly...
Just going round and round.
Being refunded
and then invested in something else that you then return.
Yeah, I mean, it is like that. And so I look forward to getting that back up to £150 when I get the £55 back for the sailor dress that I never wore.
The sailor dress.
It's a style I covet, but, you know, in reality, you put it on and you're just like, I look like I'm in cosplay.
Yeah, that's right.
And I'm not small enough of the body or dainty enough of the face.
Well, I disagree with both of those things. But
thank you.
Do you wear a little pink backpack, a fluffy backpack? And do you kick out one leg?
My bum is like a little pink fluffy backpack.
And do like a low backpack.
It's a low backpack and it's very pink and fluffy and red.
Do you have to shave it?
There's nothing. You can't discuss bums, because it is just the hole, isn't it? That's the thing that's doing all the work.
It's the star of the bum show, isn't it?
The rest of it is just embarrassing nothing, just mounds of nothing, and there is one tiny little star that's got the X Factor right in the middle.
Yeah.
And it's doing everything.
There's two big morons standing either side of the little genius in the middle.
Yeah, exactly.
The angrily puckering genius.
Yeah. And me and my flatmate today, actually, I thought of something really disgusting. Imagine someone who had a tiny bum hole on their neck.
I mean, we could do a whole podcast on that, really.
Yeah, but... I mean, it runs my life. It controls everything. It completely
dictates why are you thinking of bum holes on people's necks? Just because it's a horrible thing?
I live with someone who does comedy as well, right. And he was pretending to be a man. I was pretending to be his PA, and there's nothing sexual about this. We woke up and the improvisation started and we went with it. He pretended to be an artist who was doing a piece where he lies in bed all day and farts, and no one was coming to see it, and I was being his PA. And then it sort of escalated from there, and then it turned out that he had a bum hole on his neck and it was just shooting out little tiny farts out his neck.
Oh, yeah. That sounds like a Bruce Robinson idea. Have you ever seen How to Get Ahead in Advertising?
That really rings a bell, but no, I haven't seen it. But I have read my Facebook a lot. And I have Googled myself a lot.
Yeah. Who do you live with then?
Tom Sturton.
Yeah. Is that Edward Sturton's brother?
Yes, it is. Edward Sturton's son, Ivo Sturton's brother.
Is it genuinely Edward Sturton's son?
Yeah, I think so.
The newsreader?
Yeah. Right. That's his son, yeah. And he lives in the room next to me.
I was just being glib. I want to return, though, briefly to... Oh, first of all, I want to deal with the fact that you're doing comedy improv in the morning with your flatmate.
We'd had a cup of hot roasted energy, and that's what happened.
Do you just start talking and suddenly you realise you're doing comedy improv? Or does one of you say, you know what I'd really like? Is to do some comedy improv.
Yeah, up at 7, beautiful cup of Java. Then it's just, you know, a good solid hour of just theatre sports, improv.
Yeah.
Yes and. I don't think there's a better way of starting your day. I mean, there's no way of it sounding like we're not the worst people in the world, but...
It's too late for that.
It is. No, Tom just lies in his bed and my room is a hellhole. Because I moved in and I am a disgusting materialistic witch and I've still not managed to unpack since I moved in. We moved in like 6 weeks ago. So I just go and annoy him and piss around his room. And if I'm in there long enough, he will start to pretend to be like an old posh man in his bed. And I'll be his... A lot of it is me sort of being like subservient. And I mean, I don't know if that's anything to do with him being sort of upper middle class and me being a working class hero.
You wish you're working class.
I am working class.
No, you're not. Come on.
I mean, I'm so chuffed that I give off. No, I'm a dirty little scrubber.
Yeah. So am I. I worked in a mine.
I think you're lying.
No, I didn't work in a mine. But I mean, I've done worse. I've done way worse jobs.
You did look so like, wow, it was just... Yeah, I mean, my jobs, my life,
Do you think there have been any middle-class people who were so committed to living the dream of the working-class hero that they've actually gone and got a job in a mine?
Gone down in a mine.
Yeah, and they're just like next to all the mining men just saying, "Yeah, I just thought I'd come down, show a bit of solidarity, you know, what you guys do is bloody amazing and, you know... Really appreciate it. It's such bloody hard work and no one realises.
I like to think that has happened. I mean, I've done it. I've done... What jobs have I done? I was a cleaner for my friend's parents' houses, Titao Tash.
Was that really the name you traded under?
Mm-hmm.
Titao Tash.
Titao Tash.
How old were you then?
Ooh, 14.
How old are you now? That's not polite to ask a lady that, is it? Or anyone. People can just find out, can't they?
Yeah, but maybe... yeah, no, they can. Yeah, they definitely can.
So, Titao Tash, how long did that last for?
That was a good couple of years doing... It was hall, stairs and landing, hoovering, and then both bathrooms. And it was my best friend's house, who I spent a lot of my teenage years at, and then... I remember one time it was really, really depressing because we'd all run in, it had been raining and we'd come back from school and I'd run into the downstairs toilet and I was so desperate for a wee and just sat on the toilet and then didn't realise that the lid was down.
Oh, it's happened to all of us.
And then, like, I was too embarrassed to tell them, so I sort of did the best I could and it was just in my head, I was like, well, I'll be cleaning this tomorrow, being paid for it, so just wait till then to do a proper job.
Didn't you clean it up at the
well,
time?
Well, I did, but I was like, tomorrow I'll give it good. I'm going to be disinfecting this tomorrow, so leave it, won't I? Leave it till tomorrow when I'm getting £3 an hour.
Pound. I tell you one thing. Now, this might be too much. One thing that I don't suppose happens to women is when you get up in the middle of the night and you're half asleep and you need to go to the lav.
Oh, for sure.
You sit down and for a gentleman or for any person that has a working wanger,
Really?
Yeah,
a worm,
little sweet worm. Yeah. For anyone with one of those, however they identify, who goes to the lavatory in the middle of the night, my technique is to sit down, right? Because A, you're tired, and B, you can't be bothered to aim. So you sit down, you start to relax all the appropriate muscles. But then, too late, you realise that more or less everything has gone outside the actual lavatory bowl. And there is a pool of wee-wee.
Wee-wee?
Wee-wee.
What, in front of your feet?
Yeah, like pooling at the base of the toilet. Because rather than weeing into the lavatory bowl, it's just sort of gone over the side of the top.
Oh, lovely.
And it's just sort of trickled down the thing and you've got to deal with a wee-wee lake. In the middle of the night when you're half asleep.
Maybe that's why my old flat, like, I was always like, why does the front bottom, whenever I'd clean the flat, I'd be like, the front bottom of this toilet stinks of piss, and I don't know why. Isn't it? It's the wee river.
It's got to be partly that, or it's a plumbing issue. It's not properly...
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing is, of course, you have a brother, right?
Oh, God, yeah.
Jamie.
Oh, for goodness
and
sake.
And so, were you ever aware that the toilet Jamie used when you were growing up was absolutely stinky because of his poor aiming skills?
I would say...
And that's not to impugn...
That Jamie's a dirty old...
That's not to impugn Jamie, like, while especially while he's not here. I don't want to talk...
But I was about to say, absolutely not. I'd say the reason why I would never be able to tell what Jamie was doing is because we lived with my dad, who is 50% the strongest urine and 50% a big poo. Like, he is a man of scent. He is a smell. he is a smell on legs. He's like, there is... When we were growing up, it was like a small war in our upstairs bit. In the morning, the farts my dad would do that would seep out of his bedroom... I'm not exaggerating when I say there were sometimes I'd crawl out of my bedroom and downstairs because if I stood up, my nose and my mouth would just pick it up. I mean, my dad is a...
Like you're trying to exit a burning house.
Yeah, like it was like...
Do you ever put a wet face cloth?
Yeah, I remember crawling downstairs because it was like to be hit with that density of smell like a wall at that time in the morning. And you're a teenager, so it's like... Getting up early is hell on earth.
Yeah. Is he still with us, your dad?
Oh, yes. Yes, he is. Still there. What will he be doing now? Let's have a think. He will be probably walking the dogs in the pissing rain and picking up their... I mean, this has been such a poo-heavy conversation, but oh well. Picking up their poo without a bag, which I've seen him do so many times, and squeezing it in his hand.
Shut up.
Oh, honestly, Adam.
Is that true?
That is 100% true.
Oh, my goodness.
It's nothing. It's a lovely it's grass and bloody nothing. It's lovely. It's absolutely nothing. It's lovely.
I mean, the first time I saw it, I mean, yeah. He's a filth stick. So that is why I truly... I mean, he's the dirtiest person. And he's a chef.
He's
spent his life... He's retired, but he spent He's spent his life cooking food for people. And he was amazing.
You don't watch Billions, do you? The TV show?
No, what is that? I wish I did.
It's quite good. It's got Paul Giamatti in it and Damian Lewis...
Yeah, I love him.
And
Homeland.
From Homeland, right. And it's about a billionaire businessman who is involved with insider trading and...
Oh, my God, I'm going to watch it.
A government official who is trying to bring him down.
Oh, for goodness
played
sake.
By Paul. Played by Paul Giamatti. I've been trying to do a Paul Giamatti impression, which basically involves... Sounding like you're right on the verge of losing your fucking shit. But I can't quite do
you,
it.
You looked really good doing that for all the people who are listening.
Yeah. Anyway, the reason I bring it up is because there's a scene in that to illustrate the manic level of Paul Giamatti's character's kind of legal self-righteousness and his quest for everything to be just so in the world.
Mm.
He passes a guy walking his dog and he sees the guy's dog doing a shit.
Mm.
And he says, excuse me, sir, are you just going to leave that there? And the guy goes, yeah, well, I forgot my bags. He's like, no. No, 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 you have to pick it up. If you don't have bags, then pick it up with your hands. I'm not doing a good Paul Giamatti impression now. It's turning into Jim Carrey. And so there's this whole scene, which I said at the time when I was watching it with my wife, and I said to my wife, that's a stupid scene. Because there's no way that anyone would have that confrontation and force someone else to pick up the dog
plots. Have you got a dog?
I do, yeah. But we're never in the city with it.
Oh, see, yeah, no, I mean, people have threatened to run me over. Because, like, I have had such confrontations about... Because if you do generally forget the bag, and sometimes at sort of 7 o'clock in the morning, whatever, and the dog's, like, going to drop a hot cake...
A hot toddy.
A hot little shot of brown wine in your in your front room, and you're like, right, I've got to run down. And you're like, oh, for goodness sake, I've forgotten the bags. Sometimes you... I mean, it's terrible, and I know... It's disgusting, but sometimes it is like, I just walk the other way and just pretend. Because it's like, what else are you going to do? I'm not going to pick it up with my hands. I'm my father's daughter, but to a certain extent. But there was one guy who was like coming out of the road and beeped me so hard and was like, pick it up! So I ended up like walking so far out of my way to try and find some leaves because I live on like a sort of main road where there are... Where nature has left us.
Do you get told off for things in the street on a regular basis? Do people shake their heads at you?
I'm quite clumsy. I have dyspraxia.
Is that a real thing that you suffer from?
It is a real thing I suffer from, but I do sometimes wonder, is it just a lovely, as a kind doctor has made up a name for being a massive moose?
What is the definition of dyspraxia?
It's basically like dyslexia, but physical dyslexia. That's how I feel. Like, it's like, and I think there's two different types. You can be dyspraxic with big things, so like, you can't catch a ball, you can't tell your left and your right, you can't, like, run without smacking into things, kicking people by accident, and then, or you'll find it very hard to do things like sewing and small things, and I'm very good at small little bits and pieces with my hands. I can sew you up a sock, I can draw you a little picture, but I will not catch a ball, and so I will walk into you until you're into the road and I won't realise I'm doing it.
Really?
Mm.
It's almost like a kind of physical short-sightedness.
Yes. Big old moose, big old clumsy moose.
Yeah. I'm sort of obsessed with people shaking their head at me in the street. I think it's because
they don't like your podcast. They're
no, exactly. Yeah. They just think there's that prick with the terrible podcast. Plus, I saw him on 8 out of 10 Cats Does Countdown the other day and he was fucking shit.
No, you weren't.
Oh,
I saw that dance.
So, actually, that's a brilliant segue, isn't it?
Yeah.
Into 8 out of 10 Cats Does Countdown, which we were both on the other day, although not in the same episode.
No, two records, one day.
Yeah, exactly. Over in Media City in Salford, Manchester. How many of those panel shows have you done?
I've only done, officially, legally, done one other one, which was Sweat the Small Stuff, God Rest Its Soul.
Is that not on anymore?
No, it's not, because BBC Three and all that stuff.
Oh, it was a BBC Three one?
Yeah.
Who hosted that?
Nick Grimshaw, and he's obviously...
Grimmy?
Grimmy's like a two... He's an angel now, isn't he?
Oh, I remember that show, yeah. Right.
And it was Marvin and Rochelle were the team captains.
Yeah.
And my teammate was Professor Green.
Oh, Pro
the
Green.
The Doctor.
Yeah, yeah.
And then who were we opposite? Talisha from X Factor.
Yeah.
And who else was it? Oh, Sean Walsh.
Walshy. And did you just do that the one time?
Just the one time.
What did you have to do on that show?
Play arbitrary games and just try and be funny. And it's
It was
too
all
hard.
About minutiae, though, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, there was a point to it. Sweat the small stuff. Yeah, what stuff have you been sweating? I mean, it was such a blur. I literally was just a plank of jelly. Like, I was just... It's so hard with those shows. I feel like it's such an unnatural skill that you have to acquire to be able to, like... be good at them. And I think there is obviously people that have done it. I mean, just being very funny and quick is a good thing. But just to have that inbuilt in you, just being like, everything I'm going to say is going to be great. So I'm just going to say it. And I'm going to have the confidence to do that. And it's going to be great. And my voice is very, very, very important.
You're absolutely right. And I agree 100% with everything you just said. I was brought up a polite boy. And one of the things I was taught was that you shouldn't interrupt people.
Yeah.
And you should wait till the other person has finished speaking before you start speaking. And I mean, now I've abandoned a lot of that because
of
my overweening arrogance and self-regard. Mm. But, yeah, the first few times that I went on those kinds of shows, I mean, I went on Nevermind the Buzzcocks years ago when Mark Lamar used to host it.
Oh.
I think that was the first panel show that I went on. And it was traumatic.
Yeah.
I mean, for that show, and I think, still, for a lot of shows, they have writers, and you sit in the writer's room in the afternoon before the taping. With Nevermind the Buzzcocks that time, it was me and Midge Ure, and we were on Phil's team.
Yeah.
Me and Phil, Jupiter's and Midge Ure sat in this room with these two writers, and they played all the clips that were going to be in the rounds, and the two writers just sort of riffed as if they were contestants on the game, and they more or less just ignored us, not in a rude way, but they just were carrying on doing their being funny thing.
Yeah.
And we had notebooks and we were supposed to write down funny things they said.
Oh my God.
And then every now and again, Phil, because he was used to it and he wasn't embarrassed or awkward about the whole procedure. He would just sort of say, oh, I'll take that one, you know. And that's what we were supposed to, we were welcome, if we wanted to say, oh, that's mine, or I'll say that.
Oh,
I think
my
God. I think I could do that line very funnily.
Oh, my, that's hell.
And eventually, and me and Midge, you were like schoolboys trying to cheat, you know. We were looking at each other like, I'm going to have that line.
Oh, my God.
He said, I'm going to have that line. And we were scribbling them down. It was torture. And then you actually get into the studio. And, of course, the reason they do that is because of what we've just been talking about. Mm. Because most normal people don't naturally want to volunteer shit that comes into their head, especially if they're in a TV studio.
Yeah.
And it's going to be recorded.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're fed these lines a lot of the time. And I realised the value of it as soon as they started taping, because my head just emptied immediately.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I thought, well, I can't think of a single funny thing to say.
Yeah.
And anything I am thinking right now, I'm not going to say out loud. So I'll say one of these lines that I wrote down. I just thought, this is so lame. I can't believe I'm going to just say this line that this other guy said, and I wrote it down. I was like, well, this is how the show works. Okay. So I said one of these lines at the appropriate point.
Yeah.
And it got a laugh. Not a big one at all.
No,
because I didn't deliver it very well. But it got a laugh, and it didn't get a groan. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
My God, this is weird. This is how it works.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing about 8 of 10 Cats does Countdown, it was really
That's not how that show works,
no,
by the
it's
way.
Not at all. No, like, but I kind of think when I was doing it, as petrified as I was, and I was on the record that we did, it with John Kearns was in Dictionary Corner, and he, it was his first time, and we were just looking at each other because we didn't speak for the first, like, 45 minutes. Mm. We were just like, ah, the amount of times I went, was that, because I would have wanted no. But I think it's good that you get to actually play Countdown. And I think that's kind of boring for the, like, team captains because they've just done it so many times and they're obviously absolute wizards. But it actually does give you just something to focus on, just like, well, let's try and spell some letters.
And John Kearns, I mean, he was in character when he did it, right?
Oh, my God, yeah.
And that's a kind of an extreme character that he does anyway. I wasn't there. How did that one go down?
I think he did so well. Mm. I was so impressed.
So for people who don't know John Kearns,
He is just a very, very naturally funny man, and he's found a way of putting that across to an audience by wearing like a sort of monk's wig and some teeth, and he's got glasses. I'm going to be so offensive to his character. I don't know, what do you say about that? That's the sort of, he speaks like that. I don't know what you say, Jimmy, I don't know, Jimmy. Sort of that thing. But I think they liked it because he's like a plonker character and it's a bit cockney and it's a bit like stupid and thick. And I think people like that, don't they?
It's almost like, tell me if I'm getting this wrong, but it's almost like a guy, a sort of loserish guy trying to be funny.
Yeah.
And missing.
And it's like a bit weird. I don't know. It's absolutely...
That's the character. I'm not saying that's what John is.
It's it's fucking brilliant. And he's so lovely and great, but just genuinely like a very naturally funny person.
Yeah.
So
I was on the show afterwards and I was in Dictionary Corner. And I often have videos that I play in, you know. Mm. They're bits and pieces that I've kind of retired from my live shows and they don't have anywhere else to live. So I offer them up to... 8 out of 10 Cats
Does Countdown. The entertainment guys over at C4.
The problem, of course, is always what's my preamble going to be to get into them, you know? So I always write some tortured little bit to get me in there. And that's the most painful part because I think I just come across, maybe I actually just am, a sort of unctuous little prick. And the audience...
Well, that's what I've always said about you, Adam.
Yeah.
No.
But the audience often doesn't like me, you know what I mean? Like, people who come and see my live shows, they know what they're in for and I hope they understand where I'm coming from and so we're all friends. But a lot of the time, if an audience has never seen me before, I think they think I'm sort of just quite a snooty, silly dick.
No, but, yeah, I mean, I don't know if this will be in the episode because obviously you record for about 4 hours, but when I was watching you backstage on the screen... you were doing a dance where you were patting your willy and it was making me cry with laughter and there's nothing prickish about that. That's just a very silly boy
Well, that was
running around.
That was me dancing to Let's Dance. But, and yes, tapping my...
There's nothing arrogant or prickish.
Yeah, no, well, that was good because I wasn't speaking, but every time I speak, it all goes a little bit wrong and I get very rattled. And every now and again, Jimmy Carr, who's very nice to me, he would sort of look across and he would fire some random comment at me and I would have nothing. Literally nothing to come back with.
I can completely.
And at one point, I think I even, he sort of said, what do you think about that, Adam? And I was like, why are you even asking me? I've got nothing. And the and you might think that the audience might chuckle at that, but no, it was just pure awkwardness.
The guys who make that show are very supportive, very lovely, but they kind of gave me a heads up and they were just like, just FYI, the audiences can be a little bit hostile if they don't know who you are and what you've done.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to do a job of like being, try and be funny, but also try and be like, this is who I am. This is my thing.
And the audiences are perfectly nice.
Yeah. You
know, they're not mean or anything, but I think they're just, yeah, it's a very broad cross section of people, isn't
yeah.
it? And if you're at all niche
yeah.
or you're, what you do isn't immediately accessible, they can be quite suspicious.
I did a day of a little tiny little stupid thing on Harry Hill's new show that's coming out, which is a piss take of Sunday Brunch, but not, it's not a piss take, but it's like taking that sort of show and like making it Harry Hill-ish.
Uh-huh.
And I met Stavros Flatley on it and turns out we're sort of distantly related.
No way.
Oh, for sure.
Is that true?
Yeah, well, basically we're both called, I saw on the call sheet that we're both Dimitriou and it was an absolute highlight of my life to meet Stavros Flatley and Laggy, the son, he's 20 now. And I'll tell you, this is a bit of advice he gave me. If you respect Simon Cowell, he's going to respect you back. If you show him respect, he'll respect you back. So that's just a bit of advice from Laggy to me, to all of you.
Wow. And for those of you who are listening outside the United Kingdom and don't know about Stavros Flatley.
Oh, right, yeah.
Who is he?
Stavros Flatley is a father and son, Greek father and son. They, I think the dad owned a restaurant in Oakwood in North London, a Greek restaurant, and he used to do like a cabaret night. And this is what they told me. It started out with him doing a sort of fake, like taking the mickey out of Michael Flatley, Lord of the Dance, that sort of Irish dance. And he used to do it with a big fake penis that would pop out of his trousers. And then I think somehow from there, something happened and someone said, you should go on Britain's Got Talent. And yeah, and they went on it and they basically just, they're like two Greek men. One of them's got a map of Cyprus tattooed on his belly, the dad. And they wear blonde wigs and they come out and sort of do a mixture of Irish dancing and Greek dancing.
But they do it topless as well,
topless,
don't they?
Yeah. So you see their tattoos.
And the son has a similar physique, quite barrel-chested.
Yeah, barrel-chested, beautiful Greek men.
Mm-hmm.
And they come out and do a little dance. And it's just very high energy and it just captured the imaginations of the British public. And they were the Cypriot Susan Boyle. And they have been working, from what Laggy, the son, was telling me, they haven't stopped working for 5 years doing that shtick. Corporate events. He was on his way to Oxford to get paid £250 to just wave in a club.
Good one.
And he's bought himself a flat in Enfield. Unfortunately for him, he said, it's a fucking shithole. He hates it.
He didn't think to buy a nice one.
No, off. Oh, I honestly, it's disgusting. He is an absolute shithole. He's bought his sister a car to shut her up. That's what he told me. he was so lovely. And I was dressed as a Greek archbishop as part, because the show theme was Greek food. And I had a beard and moustache on and got mistaken for a man about 58 times.
Uh-huh.
Excuse me, sir, could you move over? And I was stressing them out a lot because what I was doing was so sacrilegious and
really
being, because also what I was doing on the show was you know, it's sort of the type of stuff that you just really look to do. Go on and Harry Hill hits me over the head with a plate of Frere Rochers and then puts a kebab on my head. Mm-hmm. And then I'm wearing a kebab for the rest of the episode.
Okay. Was it
and
fun
you can't
to do?
See my face. Oh, so much fun.
Harry Hill. Wow, that's cool. You worked with Harry Hill.
Oh, God. Yeah, sorry. Didn't you know I was a big deal?
Did you?
Did you know I was a BD?
Well, I did, of course. When did you meet him first?
Kind of how I met you. So doing gigs at the Invisible Dot. Like, right.
So the Invisible Dot is a little club, comedy club in King's Cross in London.
Yes. Me and my double act partner, Ellie White, he saw us and liked us, and then we've done like a bunch of live shows with him since then. Kind of like, you know, I did your show and then we did the stuff in Manchester.
Mm.
Yeah, and then I guess they were like, right, this is a Greek episode, we need someone to come on and have a kebab put on their head. Natasha Dimitriou. And I'll do it.
Good one.
And I'll do it. I will do it. But also, I didn't realise it was the last record of the series and they'd done like 8 shows. And so when they were like, we're going to go for drinks afterwards, I was like, oh, okay then. And then realised I was so deep in a rap party of a show that I'd been on for 5 minutes, having some really like emotional conversations with people that had like put their heart and their soul into this show for the past like 8-9 weeks. And there's me there being like, I know, it's just been today. It's been absolutely.
So which channel is that for?
Sky One, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a good idea. Harry Hill doing sort of afternoon, like Mel and Sue's Light Lunch.
Yeah. It is, it's a fun format to take the mick out of, isn't it?
And Paul Hollywood was on it. And let me tell you, I was not interested in that man in any way. You know, I was like, I like Great British Bake Off. He's a good presenter. I'm sure he can break a lovely loaf. That's it. Those eyes.
Did you fall in love with him?
He's beautiful.
Is he?
I mean, honestly, he's a beautiful specimen of a human being. Magic.
Wow. Does he smell nice too?
I couldn't really smell through the kebab mask.
I mean, we've talked about the way your dad smelt. Do you like it when people smell very nice?
That's so interesting you say that. I think I have a smell fetish.
Uh-huh.
I think from growing up in a house where everything smells of poo and garlic,
yeah,
I am obsessed with nice smells. Mm. And I would say my biggest weakness financially is perfumes.
Oh, what perfume do you like?
Oh, my God, here we go. Le Labo Santal 33. For those
Is that real?
For those perfume lovers out there, you know what I'm talking about, girls and boys. That scent, man, oh, man.
I like the way you said it. That could be the new advert. Le Labo. What's it called?
Le Labo is the make. Santal 33 is the scent.
Le Labo Santal 33. That's how you said it.
Le Labo. Narcissa Rodriguez, For Her. J'adore by Christian Dior.
Uh-huh.
Gucci Envy Me. It's fresh. It's fruity.
So you've got loads of different smells.
Yeah, no, people are like, what? Like,
you don't have a signature smell.
I did have a dream of having a signature smell, and then I realised my nose is a little rat and wants it all. To the point that once my friend was like, oh, my God, I met this girl tonight and she smelled so good. And I was like, what was the perfume called? And within seconds, I was on the Boots website and I'd ordered it and I hadn't even smelt it. It arrived. I hated it. I think it's the same as with people who are obsessed with shoes or something, where something happens in your brain where you're like, no, this will change my life.
Yeah.
No, this, like, it genuinely, when I smelt that Santal 33 smell, I was like, well, it's like £100 a bottle. I mean, I've only ever bought one bottle and I've still got it, the same bottle. But I mean, that's a ridiculous amount to spend on some liquid. But I was like, no, this will be it. This is the thing.
So you save that for super special occasions.
I was saving it for super... Oh, Molecule, the scent that you can't smell on you, but others can.
Is that real?
That's what they tell you at Liberty's. And I bought it. Diptyque. Oh, my God, Diptyque. Philosophicis, whatever it's called.
I thought Diptyque were candles.
They do perfumes, boy. Oh, you're going to get some perfumes from them.
Hmm.
Oud. Just oud in anything. Apparently the price of oud has really gone up.
Oud is sounds like a sort of...
What is it
authentic
now?
Arabic...
It's like a Moroccan something.
Oh, well, no, an oud is a musical instrument, isn't it?
I mean, it may well be, but it's also something that they're chopping up and putting in perfumes.
Okay. Wow, you love perfume.
I love perfume. I love... And the amount of hogs I've got with because they smell nice...
And what's going to seal the deal man-wise then?
Izzy Miyake for men. That got me into a lot of hog trouble back at university. A lot of pigs in my room because of that. My brother's smell makes my... I mean, I do sort of fancy my brother because he's so brilliant and lovely, and he smells, wears Paco Rabanne Million, which is a very common one. My dad's favourite smell is rose. And so every year for Christmas, he gets a bottle of Marks & Spencer's very, very much for women rose perfume.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it's lovely. Makes me feel like a special prince.
And what about deodorant?
Deodorant. I stress about deodorant because of all the aluminium, Adam.
What's that?
There's aluminium in deodorant, isn't there?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't got that memo.
Metal. Well, you know, like, so basically your sweat, your glands underneath your armpit, they absorb everything as much as they excrete everything. Yeah. They're just big old suckers.
Uh-huh.
And I do worry about putting so many chemicals up them. But then I went for a while trying out all the sort of aluminium-free, like my mum just has a rock, like a weird rock that she puts tap water on and like dabs, but she stinks.
Oh. So it's an actual stone. I thought it was the name of the product. Rock.
No, it's like a weird rock that she's like,
because there's rock cosmetics, aren't there?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's not that. Like my mum is like a very holistic fool. She loves it all. She loves kombucha. She loves potato water.
Yeah.
You know, if it's...
So
if
she uses a stone, but she smells.
Yeah, she smells. And for a while I was doing it. I was doing all the aluminium-free Mr. Tom's. And, you know, I didn't feel unclogged and I stank.
Mm-hmm.
So back to the usual. And also smells very important to me.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
If I had... I used to... when you'd be like... If you had three wishes, what would one of them be? And one of mine was always my sweat to smell like Fructis shampoo.
Fructis. Is Fructis still available?
I don't know, but at the time it was blowing my mind at how fruity it was.
What was the one when we were young?
Timotei?
Timotei.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Timotei.
I mean, I'm a real creature of habit. I am very gradually transitioning from one fragrance to another, you know.
Yeah.
It's mainly on the CK line. And maybe they'll introduce a new form of CK, and it's a little bit like Mac computers for me as
yeah.
well. You know, I'll buy whatever new version of that comes out like a kind of moron without investigating what the alternatives are. And it's the same with the old CK. And Timotei for ages, that was my go-to...
That was your girl.
...shampoo. I can still... I just couldn't
Wasn't
believe...
Wasn't that a ridiculously sexy advert as well, where she, like a coconut came all over her head?
Right.
I just remember being like, whoa, that's sexy.
Yeah.
I want to be that
woman.
But
the smell was amazing.
Yeah.
I mean...
I think you can still get it in particular, like, Turkish supermarkets.
It was so fragrant, though, wasn't it? It was almost like you didn't need to wear any other fragrance because the smell coming from your hair...
I mean, I'm trained as a... makeup artist, so I'm very big on products. I like it. It's perfume is the worst, but I mean closely followed by like creams.
Yeah.
And also I made friends with Claudia O'Doherty like through doing comedy a few years back, and she's feeding my habit. Seriously, she knows her way around
cosmetics and
a beauty vlog.
But is she someone who's into so-called ethical cosmetics and organic stuff, or is she not fussed that much?
I
mean, I'm not suggesting that
she's
a bad
be.
Person if she
no,
isn't.
No, I mean, the thing is, that's like, I've been vegetarian pretty much my whole life. I'm big on global warming, very big on it. Love it.
Love it.
Absolutely love it.
Let's have
but
more of
yeah,
that.
It is terrible that if someone tells me that a cream is going to get rid of black circles under my eyes... I very rarely check. God, that's terrible. Oh, God.
Oh, you're bad. You're going to go to
I know, but there. I'm just thinking, I don't even think. There was a while where I was on the Peter website and I was checking every, because there's a really good chart on there where you can check what's friendly and what's not.
Yeah.
And I guess I spend my money on good quality products, which often are much more ethically made than the more like high street stuff.
Yeah. Tell yourself that. Go on. I haven't even checked. I mean, I mentioned that and it didn't even occur to me to check. It's one
no.
of the many, many things that I'm just blindly stumbling through in my stupid,
stupid
horrible
fucking
life.
Pieces of shit just sat here.
Yeah. Crapping on about wheeze and bums when the UK's
just
voted
fucking...
itself out of the fucking European Union.
But then I just think, what else are you going to do? is so sad and so worrying in so many ways. I mean, I just don't feel like educated or... Not educated, no. I had a good education. I had a fine education. What am I talking about? But I feel so, like, inadequate to, like... I just don't know what to say. I feel terrible. And I obviously voted and all that stuff. I voted to remain. But people in my family voted to leave, and they have good reasons and they have bad reasons. And I just feel the only thing to do is just to try and find a positive outcome, find something in this, like, the fact that it's got people so alive and awake with feelings about it, channel them into, like, a force for something positive or so, I don't know, rather than just farting your way all over Facebook.
Or talking about farts on a podcast.
Yeah.
Tash, we're into the quickfire questions section.
Oh, amazing.
This is a new segment that I'm trying.
Oh, brilliant.
Out.
Okay.
I call it quickfire questions, but I think I invented that phrase, by the way. The quick is also spelt with a K.
Like quick fit?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You didn't come up with that.
Sorry. Well, it's spelt... No, it's not like quick fit because that's just K-W-I-K. This is K-W-I-C-K. C-Q-U-E.
Quicke.
Anyway, some of these you can just answer quickly if you're able to.
Yeah, definitely.
Others might send us off on stupid tangents. With quickfire questions, it's all cool. All right, what's the most irrational thing you do on a regular basis?
Probably use social media because it is... It's a madhouse going on, like looking to see if someone's clicked like on a photo.
What's that on Facebook?
Instagram, baby!
Instagram.
Facebook's you... old, man.
Yeah. What about Twitter?
Twitter's dying, sorry.
Is it?
No, it's not. Well, actually, I met someone who works for Facebook and he said the phrase, Twitter's dead.
Do you get in less fights on Instagram? For me, the whole world of Twitter is bound up with getting in little fights.
Yeah. No, Instagram is just images, isn't it? It's literally just photos.
Right.
I love an image. I love a weird image. I love to Google, like, sausage bouquet and see what comes up. And you're going to find a woman... with a bouquet of sausages. Or I like to Google, like, small brown trousers, and you're going to find some small brown trousers somewhere.
And so you post the image or you link to the image, and then the reward
is... You just post the image, and the reward is some sweet little... a sweet little heart with a number next to it, and that number is how successful you are in
and
this
world. And do people leave comments as well?
You can leave a comment. I don't know, I guess it's less embarrassing... than with Twitter. I mean, I can be worrying about a tweet for about 45 minutes.
Mm.
And that's a lot of your day.
Oh, mate, that's... I'm trying to say mate less. So I'm going to take that back. Oh, gosh.
Friend.
Oh, golly. That's... 45 minutes doesn't seem too long. I've wasted whole days worrying about that kind of crap.
Yeah.
Your name is Tash Dimitriou. Does anyone call you Ms. Tash?
Oh, yeah, I've had Tash for a long time at school. This guy called me Gash, and I thought
that's
it was...
not cool.
I thought it was affectionate, and I was like, hee-hee, I've got a nickname. didn't know what it meant. Very innocent, sweet girl I am. Tash, Rash, Pash, Ganash, Sash, Flash, Flasher, Flash Gordon, Grash, Gruler, Nasher.
Gruler?
Gruden, that's me and my oldest friends, Gina and Rachel. We have nicknames for each other, and it went from Tash, Pash, Growler, then Nasher, and then somehow Gruler, and that's what stuck. Gruler, Gruler Loddy.
Uh-huh. What's the Loddy bit?
I don't know. Just noises, affectionate noises. Gruler, Gruler's stuck. Gruler, Ruler, Growler, Howler.
That's nice.
Big, big, fat, annoying... bitch, stupid cow, thick idiot.
That's just your parents, what they call you.
Yeah.
What always lifts your spirits?
My this is going to be a sincere one. I guess my dogs are the stupidest, most foolish, stupid idiots in the world. But how can they exist? Because they're so stupid.
What kind of dogs are they?
They're Bichon Frise, and they are Teddy and Pig, and they have... Pig's attitude stinks, but I respect her so much. And Teddy is such an idiot. And Pig loves to have sex with my leg. And Teddy loves to be held like a baby. Oh, God, I love them so much. My friends and my family and just people, nice people. I feel very lucky all the time to know so many nice people.
Uh-huh. That's very nice. That's a nice answer. When you go through passport control at the airport, do you think that they should check your privilege as well?
Oh, for God's sake, yes.
What's the last film you really enjoyed?
Oh, this is a good one, because I enjoyed... Oh, X-Men, Apocalypse Now.
X-Men Apocalypse Now.
I'm sorry, but Oscar Isaac's head in that, I can't believe it's not gone more viral. It is the stupidest looking thing I've ever seen.
Oh.
He looks like a big blue lung.
Right.
And he's so evil and it just doesn't work, but yeah.
It's mad that they had an actor that talented underneath all that makeup.
It was ridiculous. I will support the X-Men franchise till the day I die.
Sure.
Because I think I'm not like a big, you know, sort of sci-fi fan or whatever, but I think it appeals to the thing in my brain, the same thing as the soaps, like collect them all, like Captain Planet. There was the yellow one who controlled fire. There was the, you know, like I think I like that sort of thing in my head. And I like how, you know, in X-Men, it's like you've got the red woman who's like so powerful. Yeah. And then you've got, you know, like Silver Woman controlling the thunders.
Were you one of the writers?
Yeah, I mean, I don't like people to know.
I think it's time to bring in the red man to control the thunders.
Yeah, no.
Have we got an ice lady? We should have an ice lady and she freezes everyone.
Purple's Disco. There's a purple one who just controls the funk. Yeah, no, I really like X-Men. I went to see it a while ago and was like, ha. And then obviously Wolverine.
Is that your happy noise?
Yeah. Ha. We were talking about a night we went to recently. Me and my friends went to this really weird night when we went on like a little weekend trip to Ramsgate. And there was it was a really weird garage night that we like stumbled across, and there was an MC on it called MC Rice, and all he did over the track was like mana 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 A to the apple, B to the bear, C to the cat, Rice, D to the cat, E to the dog, F to the Rice. That is all he did, and we were there for about 3 hours, and that was his only contribution. And he was quite overweight and had a t-shirt that just said Rice on the back. Rice!
This is an advert for Squarespace. Hey guys, it's Broshak with me, Paul Broshak. We got Mike here. We're going to talk about his new MMA comedy special. We're going to talk about his view counts, and we're going to talk about conspiracy theories. What's up, Mike?
Hello, Paul.
Hey, brother.
I'm fine, thank you. I don't want to talk about any of those things anymore.
You don't?
No. I want to talk about... I built a website, Paul.
All right, stream some fights, settle some beefs, stick it to the elites, that kind of thing.
No, it's mainly dog pictures, Paul. And I did it on Squarespace. Have you heard of Squarespace? I went to squarespace.com/Buxton and I did a free trial. And I tried some of the beautiful templates, Paul, and I typed things in. I dragged in pictures of the dogs. And before I knew it, I had a website, Paul. So I bought it and I've made some very sweet dog t-shirts and I sell those on the shop on the website.
Uh-huh. But do you still fight and stuff?
A little bit, but not really. Oh, and Paul, I wanted to tell you that when it comes time to buy your website or domain on Squarespace, if you use the offer code Buxton, you save 10%. Paul.
Thanks, Mike. Where'd you do that free trial?
Squarespace.com/Buxton.
And how sweet were the dogs?
Very.
There we go. Tash Dimitriou. Thank you very much indeed to her for coming on the podcast. Now, what else? Business.
business. Yep. Oh, it's very flappy in the trees over there. There's a lot of partridges around. Norwich, of course, is associated with the partridge, albeit the Alan partridge. But what was I saying? Oh, yeah, just sort of little bits of business, nothing much, really. A few of you heard me talking about Joni Mitchell and Hegira and Jaco Pastorius and that kind of thing. And let me know that you had also tracked some of those things down and enjoyed them. That's very gratifying. As Bill Hader said on this podcast, that is one of life's great pleasures, I think, is giving and receiving recommendations for those kinds of things and exploring, isn't it? What can I recommend to you this week? It's all pretty mainstream for me this week. Actually, I've been listening to the Michael Kiwanuka album, Love and Hate, a former number one album, as far as I'm aware. And now this is going to sound very reductive, but I would characterize it as sort of later with Jules music, i.e. music that's almost a bit too good. You know what I mean? Like the pedigree is too good, too polished, too slick, too tuneful, too steeped in heritage, fine rock and soul heritage. Like a lot of it sounds like, well, it reminded me of Curtis Mayfield in parts and Pink Floyd, you know, stuff that I love. But sometimes with that kind of music, you almost feel as if there's not enough room for you there because it's too perfect, almost too classic, you know? And I'm drawn to music that's a little bit more wonky often and has bits missing in one way or another so that they feel more personal to me somehow. Anyway, all this is building up to the fact that actually the album's so good, the Michael Kiwanuka album, that it barely matters. We played a video of his at Bug for a track called Black Man in a White World, directed by this fellow Hiro Murai, who's a very talented LA director. And then I bought the album on the strength of that. That's really good. What else? Jingles. There's a couple of new jingles in this week's show, you will have noticed. And one of them features some music that actually I didn't compose, that I stole. So I hope I don't get sued. I recorded it on my phone. It was from an arcade grabber, like, you know, one of the grabbing machines. And it was in a mall in Humboldt County, Northern California, when we were out this summer, me and my family, visiting Northern California. We stopped off in Humboldt. Just went to this quite depressing mall. And I was wandering around there with jet lag early one morning before all the shops had opened. I needed to go and buy a pair of shoes. And this music was playing, echoing down the empty corridors in this mall. It was like a scene from one of the Living Dead movies. But the music was making me smile, so I recorded a bit and then stuck my usual selection of stupid beats on top of it. But then this fellow got in touch with me via my SoundCloud page, Dan Hawkins. And he said, oh, I like the podcast. If you ever want any bass playing for any reason, then let me know. I'm an online bass player. So he has this website where people get in touch and they send him a track and say, can you stick some bass on that? And he sends it back with some bass on. You know, you can tell him what kind of style you're after. Anyway, I sent him the Humboldt Grabber jingle, and he sent it back within a few hours with this bass on it, which is really good. And he didn't do it on the condition that I give him a shout out at all or anything. He didn't ask for anything. He just was doing it in the spirit of interaction. So thanks, Dan. I'll put a link to his website on my blog. Here's the blog address.
I've got a blog. Rudy, Rudy, Schmoody, Rudy, blog. I've got a blog. Here's the address. It's adam-buxton.co.uk. So check it out.
There you go. I think that's more or less it for this rambly outro.
Thank you so much to Seamus Murphy Mitchell for his production support, and to Matt Lamont for additional editing. Can't exactly guarantee when the next podcast will be with you, but it should be sometime within the next couple of weeks. I've got a few more exciting guests before I take a break at Christmas time and regroup for 2017. Rosie? Rosie?
The gloaming is turning to the darkening. And when the darkening comes, it is not wise for whippet poodle cross dogs to be out bouncing. No, no. The wise Pipette will return to the warmth of the house for a scritch-scratch in front of the fire.
Rosie! Here she comes. All right. Hey, listeners, thanks very much for joining me. And until the next time we share the same sound space, take extra good care. I love you. Bye.